were polished, they were they were brushed down, they were displayed. They were pets, so therefore you look after your pet. The 18th century conversation pieces, as they were called, frequently had black servants in attendance as symbols of wealth, but also as symbols of servitude.
Some black people could flourish in this gilded setting, but others ran away or were abandoned to join a growing underclass of sailors, entertainers, peddlers, and thieves now thronging England's cities.
Many were desperately poor. Many of them were beggars. You have rabbit sellers, you have market sellers, you have fairground performers, you have strolling actresses. They did whatever they could. They were highly visible in many areas of English life.
By the 1770s, there were up to 15,000 black people in England's cities. Among them was one runaway who was to strike the first blow in the battle for freedom. The abolition struggle began almost by accident, sparked by a runaway black servant, one of thousands living in fear of the slave owners.
Runaway some time since, a Negro lad about 18 years of age answers to the name of Starling, now the property of Ralph Cook at the sign of the Rising Sun in Princes Street, Bristol. Whoever shall harbour or conceal the said black will be prosecuted as the law directs. But any person who will secure him and give notice to his said master, Ralph Cook, shall receive 1 guinea reward.
Once caught, runaways could be returned by force to their masters. The capture of one former slave was witnessed by a pioneer abolitionist, Granville Sharp.
Granville Sharp, who had nothing to do with slavery, comes across a black boy in the streets who's badly beaten up and makes a simple inquiry, which is like, you know, what's happened? And gets the story. And when he understands the cruelty endured, the suffering endured by ordinary black people in this country at the hands of cruel masters, he decides, like any decent Englishman or Christian, to do something about it. And he spends the rest of his life campaigning for the end of the slave trade.
Sharp managed to prevent the ship's captain from taking the boy, James Somerset, back on board. According to law, he was just a piece of property, but Sharp took his case to court, arguing that Somerset should be a free man. The case went to the country's top judge, Lord Chief Justice Mansfield, a Scottish landowner. Mansfield agonised for 7 months between equally unpalatable alternatives, challenging an Englishman's property rights or allowing slavery on British soil.
He gave his judgment to the effect that the air of England was too pure to be breathed by a slave. And he ended up, let the black go free, which may not be politically correct, but was a splendid demonstration of his feelings.
One black person was not only free, but family at Mansfield's London home, Ken Wood. His niece's constant companion was Dido Lindsay, the daughter of a captured French slave and Mansfield's nephew, Sir John Lindsay.
She used to appear after dinner, rather to the astonishment of some of the great men of the time who went to Ken Wood, who disapproved of that sort of thing. And not to put too fine a point on it, the Lord Chief Justice got a entirely, I think, false reputation as a kind of nigger lover. And in fact, he was genuinely a very affectionate and kind great uncle to Dido.
Mansfield never revealed whether Dido's presence influenced his judgment. In any event, black people were still for sale in England.
To be sold. A healthy Negro slave named Prince, 17 years of age, measuring 5 feet 10 inches and extremely well grown. Enquire of Joshua Springer in St. Stephen's Lane, who has likewise to sell a 4-wheel chaise.
The Somerset judgment triggered a wave of agitation against the cruelty of the slave trade. At the center of the campaign, led by Sharp, were heart-rending testimonies of former slaves. Olauda Equiano published a best-selling record of his life as a slave. He toured the country on behalf of the Committee to Abolish the Trade. His testimony moved the crowds.
To kidnap our fellow creatures, however they may differ in complexion, is a crime as unjustifiable as cruel. Can any man be a Christian who asserts that one part of the human race were ordained to be in perpetual bondage to another?
Equiano was actually part of a much larger abolitionist movement. There were many white people, of course, but he was part of an abolitionist movement that included a number of black figures. You see letters to the newspapers called Sons of Africa, and they would sign letters or present articles or petition people for change. He was part of a large and important black community that was becoming literate and very politically active.
Thomas Clarkson became one of abolitionism's moving spirits. As a Cambridge student, Clarkson had written a prize essay condemning slavery. Ending it would become his life's work. Clarkson set off on the first of many fact-finding tours to the great slaving port of Bristol.
The vested interests were incredibly powerful. The merchant venturers who ruled the roost in Bristol up until the 1830s were very much against the abolition of the slave trade, and so were many people in Bristol outside the merchant venturers, the people whose jobs depended on servicing the ships, of building the ships, of manufacturing the goods that were exported to Guinea, of processing the stuff that was imported from the Caribbean. It was said that the grass would grow in the docks of Bristol if the slave trade were abolished. So there was tremendous opposition.
Clarkson inspected dozens of ships and talked to sailors who had seen the treatment of slaves on the seas and in the Caribbean. The merchant venturers retaliated.
It has been found that the African and West Indian trade constitutes 3/5 of the commerce of the port of Bristol, and that if a bill should pass into law, the decline of Bristol must inevitably follow, and the ruin of thousands.
While Clarkson was touring the slave ports, Equiano heard of an atrocity that was to seize the nation's attention. In September 1781, the Liverpool ship Zong was carrying 442 slaves from Africa to the West Indies when the captain, Luke Collingwood, lost his way. Soon, water ran short. Slave rations were cut. Collingwood's cargo began to die before his eyes. He decided to throw 133 sick and starving slaves overboard. He assured the crew that they would not lose their share of the profits. The insurers would pay up. In court, the lawyers argued that drowning slaves was no different from ditching horses.
This starts a stream of protest, and more crucially, it starts people thinking, can you really equate black slaves with horses or other kind of cargo? And increasingly, people are saying, no, you know, these are our fellow humans. They are not chattels. You cannot treat people as property, as cargo, as goods in this way.
After this outrage, the cause won an unlikely convert. The Church of St. Mary Woolnoth in the City of London recruited a repentant former slave ship captain, John Newton, as its minister. Newton's hymn, Amazing Grace, celebrated the finding of truth and freedom.
He talks about his conversion from being a slaver to supporting abolitionism. And he makes these rather stammering but deeply felt sermons on this subject, offering himself as an example of a conversion process which the nation at large must take part in.
I have a conviction
that the share I formerly had in the trade binds me in conscience to plead for the end to a commerce so iniquitous, so destructive as the African slave trade.
The abolitionists knew that their case had to reach many people who could barely read. They used methods that would be recognized today. Their slogan was taken up everywhere.
That was what was needed at the time. A simple appeal using one image which was instantly recognizable and, if you like, a sandbite. Am I not a man and a brother? From towns, from villages, from all social classes, people sometimes who could hardly sign their names would sign their names and present petitions against slavery. And this single issue caught the British imagination. White people were marching and petitioning on behalf of black people.
Years before they were allowed to vote, ordinary men, and for the first time women too, were petitioning Parliament. Abolitionist propaganda hammered home the inhumanity of the passage across the Atlantic. Clarkson revealed that each slave was forced into a space smaller than a coffin for the entire six-week journey. This shocked people who would not have subjected their animals to such treatment. Clarkson's poster of a Liverpool slave ship, the Brooks, carrying 600 slaves, went up across the nation. The campaigners believed that it would only be a matter of time before Parliament took its lead from the people and abolished the slave trade. To lead the political campaign, Clarkson had recruited a respected independent member of Parliament, William Wilberforce.
They both realised they couldn't manage without each other. Wilberforce, the first-class orator, the man who had influence, the man who had money, the man who was accepted by the public as being immensely popular. And Wilberforce knew that he couldn't cope without the facts in front of him. And there was a quote about him needing an intellectual walking stick, and that was Thomas Clarkson.
But for all his popularity, Wilberforce wasn't going to have an easy ride. Ranged against him were the most important political figures of the day, from the king downwards.
It's difficult for us to imagine, isn't it, that anybody could have opposed this thing at that time. Of course, there were the great trading ports, Liverpool and Bristol, whose prosperity depended entirely on the trade, and they had their members of Parliament. But apart from that, the West Indian sugar planters had their own representatives, agents in this country. I think it's estimated they had more than 50 tied members in the House of Commons who would support their case. Well, 50 is quite a good thing when you're counting for votes.
The pro-slavery MPs weren't popular, but they didn't need to be. As long as influence could be bought, the slave trade was safe in establishment hands.
The West India interest and the mercantile interests associated with them put up a long and, one would have to say, relatively successful rearguard defence of slavery and the slave trade, which became hugely unpopular because it became a symbol, really, of what was called at the end of the 18th century old corruption, of an unreformed political system where people with money could simply buy influence and power.
Today, a Liverpool street bears the name of one of the city's biggest slave trading families. The Tarltons personified the old corruption. Thomas Tarlton's family firm fitted out dozens of slave ships, and his grandsons became MPs principally to defend the slave trade. The Tarltons could reach places and exercise influence that the abolitionists could only dream of.
This is a letter from John Tarlton, the MP, dated the 5th of February 1788. Dear Clayton, Mr. Pitt on Saturday morning sent for me into Downing Street, where I remained from 21 past 11 till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then the letter goes on to say, I expatiated on the value of the imports from Africa and the West Indies and North America to Great Britain.
and that should Mr. Wilberforce's plan for the prohibition of a further importation of Negroes into our islands take place, the consequences would be total ruin and impending destruction.
John's brother Banaster abandoned reasoned argument for abuse of abolitionists. He called them
the junta of sectarians, sophists, enthusiasts and fanatics, out to destroy a trade worth £800,000 a year and employing 5,000 seamen.
I don't actually think that there is much point in looking back and saying my family were dreadful or anything like that. I think that they were doing what everybody was doing at the time, and it was not considered to be an awful thing.
Wilberforce introduced a bill to end the slave trade almost every year from 1788. Each time he failed.
96 was quite a landmark where he really hoped to have his bill going. But then they were defeated by a very popular opera which was on at the time, on the third reading, and all his supporters were away at the opera and they didn't turn up in time, and he lost it at the third reading. It's an absolute terrible thing. So this was always likely to happen when Whiffs didn't exist, and anyhow he was only a private member. So there were always these adverse votes and disappointments.
The noble cause seemed likely to founder. But astonishingly, the first crack in the wall of resistance came from the planters themselves. In the Caribbean, the relentless work and cruelty meant that for every 100 slaves, only one child was born each year. The labor force was maintained by continuously importing slaves from Africa. But by 1800, planters had grasped that allowing slaves to marry and live in easier conditions would produce new slaves at no extra cost. Some offered incentives. In Barbados, 6 shillings and threepence per child. As the planters' resistance weakened, the abolitionists were winning new converts in Britain's ports. Thomas Clarkson found that the slave voyages were as dangerous for the crew as for the slaves. He used the fact ruthlessly.
One of the arguments for the slave trade was that it trained sailors ready for the British Navy. Well, Clarkson added it up, and of all the sailors that were on the slave trade that were gathered each year, about half of them failed to return home. And this was a key fact to Wilberforce, which he was able to put before Parliament.
The political establishment remained reluctant to abandon slavery. They valued Africans not just as plantation labour, but as soldiers. Black men had bolstered the West Indian regiments for decades. At the height of the abolition debate, the King's generals were still desperately buying slaves.
It is universally admitted that the black force in the West Indies should be augmented as much as possible with a view to lessen the consumption of the European troops. The best mode of effecting this augmentation would be to take every advantage of the time allowed before the Act takes effect and enter into a contract with the merchants at Liverpool to furnish 2,000 to 4,000 slaves of the tribes from the Gold Coast at Barbados, from whence they could be distributed as the officer commanding should direct. Half, or certainly one-third of this number, might be taken at the age of 16. Well-made and healthy lads.
By the early 1800s, Britain was fighting a great war against the French in Europe and the Caribbean. The politicians, searching for a way to unite the nation, put on the mantle of moral superiority. Napoleon permitted slavery in French colonies, so Britain would abandon it.
This is a way of, if you like, rebranding Britain in an advantageous way. The British establishment can stand up in 1807 when they abolish Britain's participation in the slave trade and say it distinguishes us against the French whom we are fighting. They have reintroduced slavery. We, the British, are pulling out of the slave trade. So it's, if you wanted to be cynical, you could say that this is a cause which has an appeal not just to reformers, but to the establishment, to orthodox patriots who can see it as one more proof of Britain as the supreme land of liberty.
In 1807, a weary Wilberforce finally gained his victory. The establishment U-turn gave the abolitionists the votes they needed to outlaw the slave trade.
Great speeches were made by the politicians, and then they all paid tributes to him, and he sat, so he said, with his head between his hands, tears pouring from his eyes. It was the greatest moment in his life.
Today, the abolition of the slave trade is regarded as a parliamentary triumph for Wilberforce, now commemorated in Westminster Abbey. But abolition was the work of many hands. It needed the contributions of Granville Sharp, Olaudah Equiano, and a host of others guided by the tactical genius of Thomas Clarkson.
Slavery had its Oscar Schindlers. Heroic in a quiet sense, you know. They were just moved by just a sense of dignity and an outrage that in their own country, which values liberty and freedom, and freedom of the body from indiscriminate abuse, that this should be happening to black people. Well, they were black or not, it didn't matter, but they happened to be black. So a simple moral outrage and a courage to take on the establishment and to win.
The Christian reformers' victory had only halted the trade. For the hundreds of thousands still enslaved in the Caribbean, freedom would only come after violent rebellion. The slave trade was abolished in 1807. In Africa, the victory was greeted with dismay. On the coast, an entire economy had been built up around the slave forts. Now they were abandoned. Abolition cut local traders' business by half.
It presented a dilemma to the local people. If the trade was suddenly stopped, then what would be their livelihood? And so, in a way, the local Africans, they tended to oppose the abolition of the slave trade because that was their livelihood.
Worse still, the British Navy was told to intercept slaving voyages run by British ships to plantations in America, Brazil, and Cuba. The slave trading kings were enraged.
By the 1820s and the 1830s, the Africans along the coast had to adjust to a new situation, and that is trading in what is called legitimate goods.
In the Caribbean, Africans were still enslaved. They felt cheated of their freedom. Surprisingly, it was religion that would fan the flames of their rebellion. St. Anne's Anglican Church on the island of St. Kitts. Two centuries ago, the only black faces here would have been outside waiting for their masters to finish worship. This was the church of the owners, and they wanted it kept that way. Slaves had their own churches and preachers, often slaves themselves, teaching that all were equal in the sight of God. These men and their congregations were to be the core of slave resistance.
They're very courageous in trying to preach, because most slaveholders initially were opposed to teaching Christianity. The notion was that teaching slaves Christianity might lead them to think in terms of freedom, if they begin to think of themselves as people. Slaves had ears, and they would hear this debates, the discussions going on questions of abolition. There are slaves in taverns, there are slaves in the households, and they're all hearing this. And the way they interpreted it, that the king wanted to free them, but the planters were actually stopping it. And I believe that this is one of the things which ensured that we had more slaves, more slave revolts becoming more intense.
Slaves had been running away from the start. Some managed to set up rebel settlements. Rebellions were put down by the superior force of the colonial militias. But in the end, it was slave revolt that forced both planters and politicians into conceding complete freedom. In Jamaica, Robert Beckford is searching for the part his ancestors played in the slave revolts. Jamaica's national hero, Sam Sharp, began the island's most momentous uprising, planned on a Beckford plantation. Sharp was an unlikely rebel, a trusted slave, literate, numerate, and a Baptist minister. Robert's arranged to meet Sharp's spiritual successor in the rebel leader's own church.
What kind of risks were the slaves taking by siding with Sharp?
Well, lots of risks just by being off their plantation at wrong hours. They were running a certain risk. But rebellion, or anything that looked like rebellion, was harshly put down.
In December 1831, Sharp used his weekly prayer meetings to urge the slaves to go on strike. But the moderate action he planned soon spiraled out of control. Groups of slaves broke curfew and set fire to whole plantations.
They began to burn estates over a wide area. One beacon on that hill got its answer on another hill, and so on.
The revolt was doomed. 14 planters were killed, but hundreds of slaves died in the militia's reprisals.
They were ill-equipped to fight the war. Many of them did not know how to use firearms. Sharp decided that if he were the main cause, then maybe he could stop the killing by giving himself up.
Sharp was tried as a ringleader. A planter's court found him guilty. He was sentenced to be hanged in the square which now bears his name.
He did not deny that he had been involved. He simply, on the gallows, argued that he reckoned he had a right to be free.
...580 slaves were executed. Hundreds more were brutally punished. The floggings went on for days and were carefully recorded. Among the lists of punished slaves, Robert Beckford finds the name, the person he's been searching for.
This is absolutely mind-blowing for me. It tells me there were people from the Beckford plantation involved in this revolution. And for me, as a Robert Beckford living today, it affirms my identity. It's one thing that makes the Beckford name worthwhile. I feel a real connection between that Robert Beckford and me as Robert Beckford. It's almost as if this is the discovery that I wanted to make in terms of grounding my identity in something concrete. And here I can see a black Beckford that I can identify with.
News of Sharp's revolt and its repression caused consternation in London.
I think it is not claiming too much to say that Sam Sharp's rebellion was the trigger that sort of brought things to a head. Although there was disquiet in the British society, and there were many in England who had been agitating against it. But this rebellion
and the kind of brutality with which it was put down, I think it stirred the conscience of people of conscience.
Less than 2 years after the rebellion, Robert's ancestors would have crowded outside Jamaica's National Assembly to hear the proclamation. It was a total victory for the rebels. All slaves were to be freed by the 1st of August, 1838. Slaves gathered in the streets to celebrate. But even those with the most benevolent of masters soon saw that liberty carried a high price. The Codrington plantations had covered large areas of Barbados and Antigua for 200 years. Their slaves were now free, but their food and lodgings were not.
It was a huge cultural change, which no one had thought about. You, before, never had to look for a job, and you never had for 200 years. You didn't know how to go about marketing yourself, where to go. You probably could only do one skill. You hadn't got other skills. And you had freedom, which is what everybody wanted.
But you didn't have
the
land.
Yeah. No income, no land, no food, scarce.
No tourism.
You see, the plantations used to make all their own food, you know, and bring it in and salt things and what have you. So everybody had enough to eat. One slave who was called George Codrington writes to ask for more money because he says he's got 8 children and he now has to pay the doctor's bills for them because now he's a free man. He doesn't get free doctors and free and not looked after. He has to house himself and he has to clothe himself and feed himself. Of course, before he bought his freedom, he got all that. And I think this was the big change.
The slaves had won freedom, but precious little else. Not so their masters. Robert Beckford is back in England. He's about to discover the sting in the tale of emancipation. Whilst the slaves were simply left to fend for themselves, their owners won a huge government windfall. 20 million then, about £1 billion today. In the library of the City of London, he's making a final reckoning with the family who owned his ancestors, one of many planters who shared the compensation.
From my calculations, roughly £20,000 were paid in compensation to William Beckford and members of his family just for the slaves in Jamaica. Slave owners got £20 million in old money in 1830s for compensation for the for the loss of slaves. The slaves received absolutely nothing, Jack, and they had to go and eke out a living after slavery.
The end of slavery should have been a moment of liberation for black slaves. In fact, it confirmed for generations to come the ascendancy of their white masters.
In the end, the Emancipation Law was a very moderate law in the sense that it compensated not the slaves who had done so much unpaid labour, for years and years, and who'd built up the wealth of Britain. The people who got the compensation were actually the former slave owners, and they got a huge sum of money in compensation.
In 1838, slavery ended in British colonies, but over 500,000 former slaves were provided with nothing to equip them for a fresh start. Some freed slaves took ship once again, but unlike their ancestors, they went willingly, bound for a new horizon. They were to transform Britain in a way that is only now being understood.
It takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor and love, not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Nakana, nakana, karamawi, karamawi. Adoniai, Selassie, Abashan, Pi, Rastafari. Sounds gone at the jail at the ruler. Yeah, I'm ballin' at a fooler. Say not the jail at the ruler. Say that not the jail at the ruler. Jail at the ruler, the jail at the ruler. Say not canana, 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 the jail at the ruler. Jail at the ruler, in jail at the ruler. Man, they say them jail in Jamaica. Jedi ruler, if him trade in Holland. Jedi ruler, if him trade in England. Jedi ruler, if him trade in Canada. Jedi ruler, if him trade in America. Jedi ruler, anyway, him trade him a the ruler. You don't have to ban a trade. We have some trade out there, we just follow it, walk on, run serious joke. Trade at the ruler, trade at the ruler, trade at the ruler, trade at the ruler. Till you bought the son of Kala, ruler of a pooler. Till you bought the son of this, I wanna well cooler. Trade at the ruler, sounds call not the trade at the ruler. I wanna come here because you're no fool, yeah. Trade at the ruler. Jade a the ruler, I'm Jade a the ruler. Jade a the ruler, every Jade a the ruler. Every naughty, 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 Congo naughty, Jade a naughty, Doni, Yaya, Bashanti, Islas, Yaira, Stafari. Son of creation and daughters of Zion, 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 Zion. Oh, naughty, Jade a the ruler, ruler of a pula, Jade a the ruler. Na soda na tijera di rula. Na topa ya Congo ae. Abashanti ya doni ae. Ya di rula. Soda na tijera di rula. Tijera di rula. Man if him trade in my England. Him a di rula if him trade in a Brixton. Him a di rula if him trade in a Canada. Him a the ruler, if him trade in Bermuda. Him a the ruler, trade in America. Him a the ruler, if him trade in Africa. Him a the ruler, sounds call not the trade of the ruler. Say that not the trade of the ruler. Say the not the trade of the ruler. Man, he say the not the trade of the ruler. Trade of the ruler, trade of the ruler. Ruler of a pula, Jada the ruler. Not the Jada no fool, yeah. Jada the ruler, Jada the ruler, Jada the ruler, Jada the ruler, Jada the ruler. Ruler of a pula, not the Jada no fool, yeah. Song as I would tell you about the son of Kala, Jada the ruler. That would tell you each and every one to come and down and settle down and really.
Roots Natty, Roots Natty Congo. Roots Natty, Roots Natty Jay. Roots Natty, Roots Natty Congo. Our parents were born in Africa. Are born in Jamaica, but every day some people are taught like they are born in Africa. But we are African, born in Jamaica. African, born in Jamaica. African, born in Jamaica. And all my brothers who born in America. Your parents were born in Africa. And all my sisters were born in America. Your parents were born in Africa. So you are African, born in America. African, born in America. And all my brothers were born in England. Your four parents were born in Africa. And all my sisters were born in England. Your four parents were born in Africa. So you are African, born in England. African, born in England. African, born in England. And all my sisters were born in Canada. Your parents were born in Africa. So you are African, born in Canada. African, born in Canada. African, born in Canada. But we are African, born in Jamaica. African, born in America. African, born in England. African, born in Canada. African, born in Jamaica. We're born in Africa, and we are born in Jamaica. But every day some people are talk like they are born in Africa. But we are African. African, born in Jamaica. African.
No bequest to our nice and decent people. I come to college, Justin McComb, originate my dignitary, one of Jason. Balo balaba, balo balaba, ya area. Balo balaba, balo balaba, ya area. Justin McComb, Justin McComb, one. Justin McComb, Justin McComb. You have a world before that and a world leap on none. But no wicked man can enter Jaja kingdom. Me look up into things and me gain wisdom. Dignitary stylish and him a come from the slum. Sometime Carmel, I man off it on. Still me now go force me now go pick up no gun. Me now have no thinking figure shoot me brother down car. Just said me come, just said me come lad. Just said me come, just said me come. But no box juice, no jive gun. No cocaine, no rat opium. No bother use your nose like a vacuum. No matica, me say no mag, numb. No heroin, me say no white rum. Look into things and you begin wisdom. Well, them the thing will make your body come down. Just said me come, lad. Just said me come. Well, Jah is so good and me say, Jah is so great. And in that Jah, I will me put me faith. And sensible things and me say, when me penetrate. Now, just said me come, lad. Just said me come, just said me come. But Jah love him enemy and Jah love him friend. A long time, Jah me say, did I want them. Say from Nazareth and me say back to Bethlehem. And then they make a move up in a Jerusalem. And all over the world me this a preach it to them. Say in that Jaja I will me put me confident. And anywhere me go me have no argument. Say nice is guarantee a 100%. Yes, just said we come lad. Just said we come. But man the rhythm I will me come fish it down. The rhythm when me sit down and the computer dumb. Well listen dignitary with the lyrical tongue. Me black it up arena me say hope I stay dumb. The last piece me black it up and then be sure grung. But just said we come, just said we come. Yes, just said we come, just said we come. But some of them are father, miss, some of them are none. Anyway, no wicked man can enter Jaja kingdom. No me look up into things that some me gain wisdom. Stylish is a youth and him a come from the slum. Say sometime calm, Jaja know me have it done. Still me, now go force me, now go pick up no gun car. Just said we come, lad. Just said we come, just said we come. But Jaja is for him enemy and Jaja is him friend. But when it come to him enemy, no fi deal with them. Ka long time Jaja me said did I want them. And in a Jaja when me put me confident. So me render me heart and not me garment. So me a fi sticker to the Ten Commandment. But Jaja said we come, Jaja said we come. But no box juice, no jive bun, no matic, no mag, numb, no heroin, no white rum, no cocaine, no rat opium. Nobody use your nose like a vacuum. Them the thing will make your body come dung. Just said we come, lad. That is we come, just said we come. We call it a Jaja people, a Jaja people. We love no a Jaja people, a Jaja people. I miss a yes, me go to school and me learn me lesson. Yes, me stay me yard and me read me Bible. A sounds man a dear man it from the evil. We call it a Jaja people, a Jaja people. We love no a Jaja people, a Jaja people. Anyway, just said we come, just said we come. But bye bye, just said we come, just said we come. You have only pa father Hannah, only pa none. But no wicked man can enter Jaja kingdom. Me look up into things that saw me gain wisdom. And pan the redeemer we make come fishy dung. The youth them know what is love the Congo jump. But just said we come.
All the songs will be a special dedication to the world and its life. We can't say the fuss and fight. With your black, purple, blue and white, let's get together and all unite. How you mean? Easy, Mr. Fiat, you want it done. Yes, easy, Mr. Fiat, you want it done. Yes, we're going to sting them like a beast and bite them like a scorpion. Anyway, we pass from me and the mic position. We call it under pressure the world, under pressure to the friend, under pressure the world, under pressure to the mother, under pressure the world, under pressure to the leaders of the world. And them are fighting power. And I want them to say him control America. The next one I say him rule in Russia. And I want them to say him control China. The next one I say him control Cuba. Wanna rule Libya, one rule Uganda. But me say gunshot a bus up in a Nicaragua. And every day them get up training like a gorilla.
Gaddafi, ya the leader, me say down a Libya. Him not afraid of Ronald Reagan, no I run America. Cause if them start the war up here, nuclear power. But every day them get up fighting like a gorilla. And fighting for the world we control by Jaja. But me ask you a question, me want an answer. Say where is the throne of Alice Ababa? Me say down Africa, down in Ethiopia. Some say that they don't have no one. But when them don't give it to a prime minister, I give a president or a hero leader. If a guy touch the throne, just set him soul on fire. Come and take it from the Caterpillar back rider. We call it under pressure the world, under pressure to the mother. Under pressure the world, under pressure to the father. Under pressure the world, under pressure to the people. Under pressure the world, under pressure to the leader. Leaders of the world and them and fight for power. And every day them get up living like a gorilla. I say million I spend up on the nuclear power. And all over the world poor people are suffer. But the way them don't take them on the field sufferer. Come take it from the cat, the bear back rider. You know here we are going down in South Africa. Poor people was killed by fly and mosquito. And I listen me say fiat and murder me charge for. Me say Africa the land of the black structure. But the white man invade and rip off the silver. Yes, them take off with gold and make up a bag of law. And every day them have the black man under pressure. What we call it? Under pressure the world, under pressure to the mother. Under pressure the world, under pressure. Yes, under pressure the world, under pressure. We say ribidi-bidi-bidi-bidi-bidi. Ribidi-bidi-bidi-bidi-bidi. Ribidi-bidi-bidi-bidi. Ribidi-bidi-bidi-bidi-bidi. Easy, Mr. Cat, you want it done, Lord. Easy, Mr. Cat, you want it done. Yes, I'm call it under pressure the world, under pressure to the friend them. Under pressure the world, under pressure. Yes, them lock off the light and lock off the water. The bill and with them said me can't find a dollar. Cause me can't get a work to make some $20. And I hope me you go feed me to baby mother. Wanna rest a jungle.
With the It Pays to Be Vaccinated contest, your COVID-19 vaccination could pay off big time. Every Friday in August, you could win $150,000 and two scholarships of $10,000. Plus, if you've had both shots September 3rd, there's a draw for 16 scholarships of $20,000 and a jackpot of $1 million. Register now for the It Pays to Be Vaccinated contest at quebec.ca/vaccination contest. The sooner you're vaccinated, the faster you can take part. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Thanks for tuning in. May you and your family have a great day and a great week. Jagaid, one love.
Thank you.
vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the...
Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a full show for you today with two pre-recorded interviews from the Arts and Culture Spot and one from Music. The first interview is with Cigar Club. Cigar Club is real rock and roll music and their latest release is named Cold. Let's listen for that soon. The second interview is with Dr. Randall Bell, author of Post-Traumatic Thriving, The Art and Science and Stories of Resilience. We're going to talk about Randall's book and hear some of his personal stories. The third interview is with Ollie Sorensen, artist. Ollie is currently exhibiting at La Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. All that is coming up. 8 a.m. brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings weather, and we'll wrap up